Warning. This podcast contains scenes of explicit violence and gore. This is Project Shadow. Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of Project Shadow, the internet audio cast for horror and conspiracy gamers. Again, we're running a little later than I'd like with this episode, mainly because I managed to lose my voice just over a week ago, just before my projected recording date for this episode. And as my voice has been getting better, I've subsequently rewrote the entire episode. So think of this as episode 4.1, with an updated service patch. Today, we actually have kind of a computer video game theme running through the episode. Our gaming section takes a look at a few of the horror and conspiracy video games which are ripe for gaming use, what we can steal things from, in other words. Our media section is going to take a look at the movie adaptation of Doom, and our focus file will find you a computer-borne threat. So, with all that to come, first, we have the news.
Whispers.
Okay, now, the news section for this episode was looking like it was going to be pretty slim pickings. Pinnacle Studios released the Solomon Kane World Book for Savage Worlds, which looks like it could be quite interesting. Meanwhile, over at White Wolf, there's a new book coming out for Changeling, Autumn Nightmares, which again looks like it could be quite good. Apart from the Peru Meteor, though, which I'm sure everybody already knows about anyway, there was very little to talk about. However, Chaosium have come to the rescue by the announcement of the first of the licenses for the new basic role-playing system coming up in 2008. And it's a zombie RPG. Genius! Now, I mentioned last week All Flesh Must Be Eaten, which is basically a zombie role-playing toolkit. This game, though, is going to be based on Dead World. Now, if you've not heard of Dead World, Dead World is a comic written by Gary Reed. It's been published by Caliber Comics, it's been published by Image Comics, and it's about to be released apparently by Desperado Publishing. However, regardless of its comic origins, what we have now is a role-playing game coming based upon that. Now, obviously the BRP system is the system that Chaosium use for Call of Cthulhu. I believe it's pretty much the same system as was once used for the Pendragon role-playing system. So it's a tried and tested system. It will just be interesting to see how well it plugs in with the Dead World setting. And to be perfectly honest, I think it should do a pretty good job. Now, if you want to take a look at the information on this, you could go over to have a look at Dead World itself at the writer's website. So if you go to http://www.garyreed.net/deadworld/home.htm, you can have a look at Dead World itself and see what the background is like, what the comic is like. It will give you a bit of a better idea about what you're dealing with. But the idea of having a BRP zombie game, I have to admit, is kind of appealing. And before we wrap up the news, also from Chaosium, they have a new fiction anthology coming out called Frontier Cthulhu. Now, Cthulhu is, you know, it's pretty much White Wolf aside, the big horror system that has been running with the role-playing world for many, many moons. And they occasionally put out works of fiction from it. This time, they're putting out a themed work of fiction set on the frontiers of North America. You know, back in the old days of the Wild West. So, what you have is a collection of works that apparently include Vikings from way, way back struggling against monstrous abominations, European colonists as they go through the motions of facing up against new terrors in the New World, and all kinds of Wild West and cowboy-related antics. There's over a dozen stories in here by the looks of it, and it's due for release pretty much now. So that's probably worth a look if you're interested in horror. Maybe a good place to get ideas for a Deadlands campaign, or to get ideas for something you can work into one of your own role-playing campaigns. So, two pieces of news from Chaosium there. First, the Dead World RPG, which is being published out of house, but it's the first license they've awarded for the BRP system, and Frontier Cthulhu Anthology. And that, for this episode, is the news.
Gaming.
Now, when it comes to getting inspiration for your horror and conspiracy games, there are a few obvious places to look. Books, obviously, are a great starting point, from classics like Dracula and Frankenstein, through Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos, to more modern works like the Necroscope series by Brian Lumley, or Christopher Golden's Prowler's books, which we mentioned way back in episode 0. Film and television, of course, is full of horror, from the silent days where you had works like Nosferatu, through to the blood and guts years of Evil Dead, through to the modern CGI-thrilled monstrosities, one of which we will be having a look at later on. More recently, though, another medium has come to the fore in the form of video games. With the advent of more powerful machines, we've seen narrative being strengthened, we've seen the visuals made more potent, sound effects and music really coming to the fore, and it has allowed video games to become a very powerful and influential medium in the horror genre. Now, as the game and the medium have united, there have been a few shining lights. Games that have really stood out and would make excellent inspirations in whole or in part for tabletop horror or conspiracy games. Now I'm going to have a look at a few of these games. This is by no means a comprehensive list, but just a few that I think would be useful to have a look at for ideas for your games, either as a player perhaps, but more importantly as a GM. Now I'm actually going to lead off with a game of quite some fame that is probably not necessarily the first place that you would look if you're looking for inspiration for a horror game, because it's not actually horror itself. Metal Gear Solid. Yeah, of course, it's primarily a stealth action game, but the narratives are loaded with an excess of conspiracy theories and double dealings, and there's quite a few character concepts in here that would adapt very well into a horror or conspiracy setting. Now, from Metal Gear Solid itself, the first game for the PlayStation, and more recently remade as Twin Snakes on the Nintendo GameCube, you have characters like Psycho Mantis and Vulcan Raven. Yeah, they're a stupid name, but they're standout characters with supernatural imbued abilities. Both are very different, but both are very easy to work into different kinds of paranormal campaigns. Psycho Mantis's strange telepathic and telekinetic abilities, plus the richness of his background, would make him an excellent individual to use. Vulcan Raven's combination of brute strength and spirituality, again, would make him a very interesting character in some games. So those themselves would be well worth working into a paranormal campaign. Further characters worthy of note would include the likes of Snake himself, Decoy Octopus, and even the Genome Soldiers, which I've actually adapted for use in Dark Conspiracy quite some time ago. They're all very rich and could be used in modern conspiracy or near future conspiracy and horror campaigns quite easily. Next on the list, we'll have a look at Alone in the Dark. Now, this is one of the oldest of the franchises as far as horror games go. It's been running for quite some time. The early pieces were very Cthulhu-inspired, although they look quite simple and primitive by modern standards. The way the stories are told, some of the ideas are still worth looking at. The more recent game, The New Nightmare, is probably far more useful for ripping for your games. It has obvious inspirations. It's obviously a very close cousin of the Resident Evil canon. But The New Nightmare does blend an excellent story of science and mysticism together, and it has some brilliantly atmospheric visuals, even on the PS1. And there's some very excellent ideas on the use of light in the game. Okay, yeah, the game itself has problems, I'll admit it. The conclusion to the game does feel terribly badly cobbled together. but there are a good few spine-chilling moments, and its use of light as a weapon against the monsters did predate Pitch Black by quite some way, and will give you some ideas for some creatures to use for your games. Now, the Native American mysticism, fused with some superb mad science, works pretty well, and there is plenty from that hodgepodge mix that should serve you well in your games. Now, I would be out of order to do this roundup if I didn't at least name drop the Resident Evil series. It's often claustrophobic, with a decent balance of scares, action, and narrative and problem solving. The series has plenty of things that you can use if you're floundering in a horror campaign. The zombies, the T-virus, the G-virus, the BOWs, the tyrants, and the Ganados from Resident Evil 4. In addition to the monsters, there are a slew of wonderful characters to play with, and not just the protagonists, not just people like Jill and Leon and that lot, but antagonists, allies, the people you just come across, people like Chief Irons and Alfred Wesker, Ada Wong and the Ashford family. All of these are very worthy concepts in different ways that would work well, with a few alterations of course, in a variety of campaigns. And whilst I'm talking about Resident Evil, I should also mention its super science time-travelling kissing cousin, Dino Crisis. Dino Crisis is a little more action-packed and faster-paced. Obviously it's more science than horror, but it captures the action-horror feel of movies like Aliens very well. Again, there are some interesting characters and a good amount of shock scares, and some very useful high-tech weapons. Now, the last franchise, the last game I want to look at, is one of the few games that have really managed to ever give me the creeps. It's not Silent Hill, which is worthwhile, but will be mentioned in a different context later in the series, but a game called Project Zero, also known by the name Fatal Frame. It's not one of the big franchises. Very few people I know have actually played it, but those that I do that have played it have really generally fallen for it. The game pits you as a teenage Japanese girl on the search for her lost brother. However, the house she checks out is, almost naturally, haunted, and her only defense is not guns or other kinds of weapons or some kind of super science, it's a camera, as in this context, photographing the ghosts in this house really does steal their souls. The key is that the photos become more effective the closer the ghosts get, which means that steady nerves and the ability to wait patiently in the face of impending doom are a strong asset, especially as the ghost's movements can become a little erratic. The game is pretty much a masterclass as well in the slow reveal of information. Photographs, diaries, and tape recordings help the player piece together what has happened to the previous visitors to the house and the history of the house itself, why all this bad stuff is happening. Akin to movies like The Grudge, the game benefits from using myth patterns unfamiliar to its Occidental viewers or players. Also, the lighting and the sounds are again influential and a good example of how low signature effects can raise fear and anticipation. Now, of course, there are other games worthy of investigation, and I do recommend that you take a look at some of these. Games like House of the Dead, Cold Fear, Clock Tower, Martian Gothic, Eternal Darkness, and of course there are others. All of these bring something different to the genre and should not be overlooked if you are a GM looking for inspiration. A lot is said against the way that video games are played. People use a video game-like as a criticism in movies and TV very often. But a lot of good can be done with the video games, especially in the field of horror. It's been very creative, very influential in many ways. So I'd recommend that you take a look at a few of these games if you're stuck for ideas for your campaign. They may give you just that little extra edge that you need.
Me there.
Of all the video game franchises that were adapted to movies, perhaps only Tetris could have been a less likely candidate for me personally than Doom. And given the success of movies such as Street Fighter, Mario World, Alone in the Dark, and House of the Dead, who possibly could have laid odds on it that Doom would turn out to be any good at all, or indeed having any real plot to speak of? I must admit, in terms of video games movie adaptations, I can think of none that I had less hope for. I even expected more from Street Fighter or from Super Mario. Doom, for me, as an idea, I just didn't get it in terms of a movie. However, to be fair, you give these things a chance. Now, Doom opens with a Predator-esque elite special forces group being recalled to action on the eve of an extended leave. Now, they're called in to deal with an emergency situation, of course. It transpires at a research station on Mars, which lies at the other end of a mysterious interplanetary transport system called the Ark, has had some serious problems, and our heroes are called in to save the day. Now, once the civilian staff are safely evacuated, our squad of heroes, accompanied by one of the facility's leading scientists, who is the sister of our hero, the improbably named John Grimm, by the way, head into the research facility to find out what's wrong. Of course, what's wrong is science gone bad, this time nicely combined with ancient horror. A combination of two factors that slowly starts to wear down even this crew of combat-ready heavies. And naturally, the threat doesn't end there. As things escalate, it turns out it's not only this base on Mars that is threatened, but could all expand to threaten Earth itself, and send one of the team over the edge to become a serious threat unto themselves. As an adaptation, it is all that you would expect and more. It is showy, loud, brash, it has heavy doses of action and a good few scares, but in some places it is surprisingly clever and there are a good few laughs in there. Carl Urban and Dwayne The Rock Johnson lead the cast, although The Rock pretty much steals the show as Sarge, as The Rock often does, to be fair to him. Sarge is a pretty dedicated and, of course, badass career soldier who is striving to do the right thing. Tucked away in the cast as well, worthy of mention, fans of 80s UK children's TV will be pleased to note that Dexter Fletcher of the old Press Gang TV series is in there, which, to be honest, I got as much of a buzz out of as anything else in the movie. Now, most of the performances aren't exactly inspired, but certainly from the principals, they're good enough to get the job done. And the cast, for the most part, are either likeable or dislikeable enough, as I needed to be. The effects are pretty good, all the way through the film, and the visuals, which, whilst a bit stark and lacking the flair and atmosphere of Aliens, who I keep coming back to compare this film with, the effects are suitable and effective in their own right. In terms of gaming material, there's quite a bit that you can lift. The background of the Menace could easily be adapted to most conspiracy games, and quite a good deal of horror settings as well. It could be pretty effective and quite scary in most. The Special Ops team are viable characters to lift, although few of them really stand out as anything that different from the norm. There are a couple that may provide good inspiration for players and GMs alike. Now, for near future campaigns, the weapons are probably going to be the big lift. Hey, this is Doom, for God's sake. It's all about big guns, and the big guns really look the business. The other thing that's worth stealing as far as technology goes are the on-off permeable, impermeable nano walls, which have potential gamer gold written all over them. As a movie, Doom was better than it had any realistic right to be. It's sharp, It's quite clever and it's gutsy, and it's an entertaining piece of movie making. Sure, it's not the best of its genre, and it's not quite the best video game movie, but it's solid fun, so I would give it a 7 out of 10. Okay, it's loud, it's brash, it's simple, it's fun. So that's Doom, directed by Andrzej Bartosiak, and starring Carl Urban and The Rock. Probably one of the few films that I've mentioned so far that would be a keeper rather than a renter. I've certainly watched it a couple of times, and it hasn't gotten too boring yet. So, 7 out of 10, Doom.
Focus fail.
From time to time, most of us have been stricken by some form of computer virus. Or at least we've been struck by the paranoia that perhaps one has gotten into your system. Despite the havoc they can wreak on your personal and business lives, at least the troubles remain on your computer. Well, usually, anyway. The Virant program is a virus with a difference. It's a data-gathering virus that doesn't limit itself to ripping the digital data from your hardware. It also wants the data from your wetware, your brain. The virus is transmitted in the usual ways, through the internet or through disks or memory keys. Once the computer has been infiltrated, the virus seeks out data files on the hard drive and transfers them back to a hub server where the data is collected. Once the various storage facilities have been checked, the virus looks to withdraw further data from the user. Using a variety of analysis techniques, it isolates the identity of the main user and starts to deploy subliminal hypnosis methods whenever they use the computer. The more time the subject is exposed to this effect, the more susceptible they become in the future. The virant continues to gather information over the course of several weeks, lengthening the subject's exposure with each session, often culminating with a massive session, perhaps over several days, leaving the subject a physical and mental wreck, at which point it quietly removes itself from the hard drive, leaving no evidence it was ever there. The virant is probably the real cause behind many cases of computer addiction, running over whatever program the user most frequently uses, perhaps a word processor, a messenger program, an internet browser, or even an MMORPG. To the unwitting, it could easily look like the victim had merely been using whatever program it was to extremes. Now, where the virant comes from and the level of effectiveness is up to the GM. The virant could be the tool of a foreign government or a seditious cell within the character's own nation. The root cause could be ETs or a maverick AI, maybe some particularly tech-adept mages, or any number of antagonists for any number of ends. So, in those terms, for any modern or near future campaign, it is supremely adaptable. In terms of mechanics for the virant, to make its first hypnosis, the selected victim must fail a medium willpower check. Each subsequent hypnosis becomes harder and harder for the victim to resist. After 2 weeks of exposure to the virus, the victim will begin to be subject to penalties to physical and mental skills as they stay awake longer and eat and exercise much less. The hypnotic conditioning also has an adverse effect on the brain's sleep patterns, which causes further disruption. Fortunately, the virus can be killed. It is adapted and modified regularly. But most virus killers, which are adapted on at least a daily basis, should be able to deal with it. Poorly protected computers are the most at risk, especially those without regular antivirus updates. Also, the virus is optimized to work with the major commercial and government operating systems, so fringe OSs may be comparatively safe. Now, this could be useful especially in areas with networked computers. I'm thinking of college campuses or government agencies, anything with a shared server. A rash of fatalities in the area, strange deaths, especially more than one death from this kind of computer overuse, could have a hidden threat behind it. A computer virus that will crash a little more than your hard drive. The Virant.
And the Grung.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Project Shadow. Hopefully the next episode shouldn't be too far away, because now my voice is back, things are going to be a lot easier. The next episode should be our Halloween episode, so it should be out in approximately 2 weeks, just in time for Halloween. I'm not entirely sure what it's going to bring yet, but I'm hoping to bring you something a little bit different. And I've been hooking up with some of my friends over on the Urban Dead MMORPG at Molten City Zoo, and we might be bringing you something a little bit different if all goes according to plan as well. So, before we go, just to give you the contact details as usual, if you haven't been to our website or forum yet, you can get there by going to http://projectshadowpodcast.googlepages.com. You can contact me on the forum through there, or you can email me at projectshadow@teamzombie.com. And again, thanks to my friend Gav for that. If you're on Facebook, we now have a Project Shadow group on Facebook. Feel free to drop by there and say hello. And those are probably the best ways to get in touch at the moment. Audio, as is almost traditional from what I can gather, has not been easy for me to access at the moment, so we'll see how that goes in the future. But other than that, it's easy enough to get in touch, and I really would like it if you're listening to give me a little bit of feedback. I've heard back from a few people, mainly friends and colleagues from other podcasts, so it would be nice to hear what anybody else, any new listeners, actually think. Anyway, it's pretty much time to go, as I've said, and as usual, I'm going to leave you with a little bit of music. This one, again, has been sourced from Podsafe Audio. It's by an artist who goes by the name of Veil Code, and this is Dead Dolls. My name's Kevin, this is Project Shadow. Goodbye.
some more. Just hold on some more.
It's Broud. What's Broud? I am really losing it with this. It's Doom. It's directed by Andre Bark. It's directed by somebody whose name I can't say. It's directed by Anzej Bartkowiak. Anzej Bartkowiak. It's directed by Andrzej Bartkowiak. Why is a Polish guy? Okay. It's directed by some Polish guy who also managed to direct Lethal Weapon 4. Was the director of photography on Lethal Weapon 4. This is such a mess. This is so good until I got to that. I skipped to the end.